session number 17395, reel 4.
Yes, I feel sure that it was the one he threw out, because, well, I mean, we never had stick grenades. We had the ordinary Mills grenade. I believe he threw it back in, and it rolled back and exploded down near him. And I believe he got injured through that thing. Anyway, we just got up, and the attack was over. And I remember after that sergeant became colour sergeant. He got promoted to colour sergeant. And from then on, I don't know, we went to other positions. And what position was it? Right. I was thinking of another. Another incident I remember was we'd been, as usual, moving forward again. And on this, I don't know if there was any connection with one of these other episodes I'm talking about, but this particular morning, it rained all night. And windy, and it was terribly, terribly cold. And we were given an area to clear of these potholes. There was these holes where the Chinese dug in, just single holes. And we had to cross this big, plain, flat area. And it was absolutely, the rain was coming down like ice. And we had our ponchos on. Have you ever seen a poncho?
Yes.
Terrible things. Terrible, terrible things they were. They were all right to lay on, but to walk around in, you couldn't use them in act. Well, we had to, our orders were to walk across this area in line with this. It was about 8 o'clock in the morning, blowing and raining and ice cold, and I couldn't feel my fingers, and I don't think anybody else could. And we had to clear these, see if there was anybody in these holes. One fella did meet one, and he shot him in the throat. I don't know his name. I believe he got shot in the throat. And one of our boys in this line. And I believe he got shot in the throat. And if anybody had got up in front of me, I could never fire my rifle anyway. My hands were too cold. I couldn't move my fingers. They were absolutely numb. You know, I just couldn't feel my hands at all. I wouldn't have even fired. I never had the strength in my fingers or the thing to. If I'd have met anybody or anybody had been in one of the holes, I couldn't have done nothing about it at all. Anyway, that went by. I went to another position.
These holes were in no man's land.
They were in. Well, I to us, it was like more round land, or whether it was us or in the process of us going forward, I don't know. We were never told, you know, we went from there to here, there to there, and I cannot link up the places, how we got from these different places. We never had no transport. There was no such thing as lorries, or it was all walk, walk, dig, walk, dig, walk. And some of the positions, I remember, this is the big thing I will remember. When I look back, it was we were in an area, and it was a comparatively quiet place, big area, and all of a sudden they started to say, right, we want to get some firing practice in. And we had to, I don't know what this was earlier on, it was earlier on in career thing, and we actually had tents. So it was a comparatively quiet area. They only told my head tents. And we had to go on. The Americans were there. We went to a place with the Americans, and we all shot at a go at their carbines. You know. Just for a little bit of thing. And then they got this big area of trees, and they put these targets up. And they officer took each man, one at a time, through this area to shoot these targets as they come up. Well, you're so, you know, don't know how many are going on. But anyway, we've done this. Then we were doing our laying about, whatever. And it was the, I believe, offhand, it was the first formation of the Commonwealth Division, the first movement they made in Korea as a group. New Zealand, Turks, French Canadians, Aussies, and that was, I believe it was the first movement they'd made as a division. And the morning we were going to move, early morning, we had these tents, and we were on a bit of a high ground. I always try to get a bit of a high ground if you had a tent. And it blew. They reckon that was the tail end of a typhoon. There was a name for it, like all typhoons and hurricanes. And that we were going to pack our stuff away, the wind blew it. Everything went. And it torrential downpour. Now, it had a lot of rain beforehand. And we start to move. And we all moved, I don't know. It was a whole brigade, a whole division. And we moved forward. We had no food with us, ammunition. And I believe we had to cross the river. And who was with us was the New Zealand artillery. Well, we walked north in either battalion, I think it was our battalion, and you could see them in, we were walking on the skyline of these hills north, and we were walking, and we were supposed to have come back. But with these typhoons, and now the rivers in North Korea, the Injun, if you look back in the history, there was a big floods of the Injun. It flowed down, the artillery couldn't move, or something couldn't move. We had to stop there. There was a big mountain ridge. It went for miles and miles and miles. You could see some of our men on them. They were all on the skyline, funny enough, which was unusual. But that was fairly thickly wooded. You know, there was a lot of trees on some of them. But we could see them when they came down. There was good hundreds of men walking forward and forward. And back, you could see them. And you couldn't see much, because there was a lot of ground between either side. Or was flat ground. But this mountain ridge. Anyway, we couldn't get back. They said, right, we'll all go out to stay the night. We can't make it back because the heavy stuff can't get back over the river because of the floods. So this was a fairly steep hill, and I remember, like a lot of trenches, I stood in trenches and the water just filled up to my backside. And you stood there all night in them. You couldn't get out. You couldn't dry off. You just hoped it was going to be sunny the next day. I stood in water many, 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 many nights up to my backside. Freezing cold water. You couldn't get out there. In this particular night, the hill was so steep, you've got to dig in. And it's the first time in Korea that I ever dug in with three ranks or two ranks of trenches that were scattered, like one there, one just behind, and one there. Normally, it's just one row of trenches. But this particular night, for some unknown reason, I don't know why, but we had to stagger them. And I remember I was in the front trench, one of the front trenches. And I was concerned about the trench behind me, if we were attacked, far and through. You know, below it was fairly steep, so you didn't have too much thing. And we had to stay there. And during the night, there was a whole hell let loose with shellfire. Fellow, I know the name of the man, but I shan't mention his name. And he started to scream out. He wanted his mother. And I said to him, "Are you all right?" I said, "Calm." I weren't brave. I said, "Keep calm." I said, "You all right?" I said, "They said that they were drop shots of the New Zealand artillery. And two, I think it was either one or three, I can't remember, one or three of our blokes got killed behind me on the trenches." So I moaned and groaned a bit about being down the bottom, but probably I was better off down the bottom than I was on top, because that's where the shells landed. Whether they were there, artillery, that's what we were told. They were drop shots from the New Zealand or whoever was firing them. Well, you occasionally had drop shots, but there was two or three drop shots, which was unusual in one range, I would have thought. But he started to panic a bit, and he started, "Oh, what the mama?" I said, "All right, you know." Not that I was no Audie Murphy, I just didn't panic, I suppose. Anyway, we stayed there, and we had no food. We couldn't get back, couldn't move back. And that was the only time in Korea that we had an airlift of food. And we see the planes come over, and on the way, and this is a funny part about it, on the march forward, we were that exhausted and that tired. And you hear of silly stories, but they're not silly stories when you're in, when you come up against them yourself, about throwing things away because they're too heavy. I remember throwing packets of cigarettes away out of the pack because become too much of a weight. And that's the gospel truth. Ammunition. Clips of 5 shots of ammunition to take the weight off your shoulders from your back. And I did it. Grenades. Threw down on the hill at the side because we were exhausted. When we got in the position we wanted them, didn't we? We never had so much. But we didn't get attacked. All of these shells. They dropped our air threat. They were dropped in yellow parachutes, orange parachutes. And a group, I didn't get in that group. I wasn't in that one. Whoever, the other end, a group went out and picked up the parachutes and brought us the food. And that day, we had corned beef. They were British. Must have been British because we had corned beef. It was corned beef and bread and something else. And we had that in the morning. And then we moved back. And we moved back, and I don't know where we went to back. To where or how we got back to what we'd done, but everybody got back. But I think that was a bit of a hash, as far as I can see, due to the water, due to the extensive water. Then we moved to a position. It was late one day. There again, that was a torrential downpour, wind, cold. It was an atrocious night, and I don't know how long I'd got into this position. And this fellow, I won't mention his name, two of my mates, who were with me most of the time, they always relieved me in my trench, or more or less most of the time. Two on, two off. And we were in this position. It was a terrible, terrible night. Really terrible night. The water was in the trench. It was filling up as fast as you got in it. And I don't know how close we were. We must have been fairly close to the line. But what happened was, we were so exhausted and so tired that men were falling asleep. Before I left that engine patch, what I was talking about, where we left to come out and let the French... Oh, that's right. When we left that night off that engine river, they moved a group of French Canadians in with half tracks. And 2 nights later, they got attacked in them positions what we were in. They lost, I think, 2 prisoners and 6 dead. Now, what would have happened if we'd have been there? They must have known it was a strategic move. Getting back to that, I forgot to tell you that bit. That they got attacked. With 6, they had 6 armoured half-tracks in that position where we were in. And they lost 2 men and 6 dead, I believe. So what would they have done to us? But then, anyway, getting back to this position... It just reminded me of that. I'd done my shift. Or these two boys done theirs first. Then I done mine. Was it dark? About 6, 8, 8 to 10, 10 to 2. I believe I'd done mine from... My last 2. 2 to 4. Me and my mate, and I cracked back to, we had tents, another time we had tents, behind the positions. It was, the weather, I couldn't imagine it, you couldn't get any worse, it was absolutely terrible. I crawled back to the tent, I undone his tent, and I said, come on Jimmy, come on Doug, out. All right Jack, I said. I didn't have to tell them what the weather was like. It was absolutely blowing the tent out, stood up. I don't know. The water was on there. I said, it's terrible out here. I said, your shift, come on. I said, come on, get out now. I said, out. He said, all right. I went back and I got my mate. I said, come on. Come on out. Got in our little tent. half ten. And in the morning, I get up, they stand two, 6 o'clock every morning, stand two, you had to make to your trench, stand two. And when I got there, was a lot of commotion and all that. I don't know, where's Jimmy, where's Sonny? Oh, they're gone again. I got arrested. I said, and they never got out of the tent to go into the trench. Well, of course, that left that trench empty. They had a officer or a sergeant going round checking all the trenches from that engine run, but where I was on the engine, we were so tired, they decided to have a patrol of one NCO or one officer on, off, to make sure the trenches were alerted because they were falling asleep. We were really dead dog tired. And they had one on this one, obviously. And, of course, they took these two fellas, two mates away, under arrest, close arrest. And they said that when he went round to check on him, there was nobody in there. Well, they could have got through them. They massacred us all in our beds, in a trench. We could have been annihilated. I was on the court martial. I got court-martialed. And they moved me back and my mate. I had nothing to do with it. I didn't cause them court-martial. I mean, nothing to do with me. I didn't put them into trouble. It wasn't my fault. It was their fault for not getting out. And I was moved back to B Echelon. I think it was B Echelon or something. And they had a compound there, prison compound, with barbed wire and a big mound and a compound. And apparently these two boys were in that compound. But when they'd done their duty, they sent them back to Japan to do their... And I had to march in. I was the officers, you know, court-martial bench. You have to march in with a warrant officer and give your name, rank, and number. And I just said, yes, sir, I'd done my previous stags and I'd done my last 2 to 4. I went to the tent. I walked the two boys up in question. I said, and that was my duty. I'd done what I had to do. I told them to get out. They promised me they'd get out. They were half out. I said, the next thing I knew, there was a commotion in the morning. They'd gone. Close arrest. Here they are. They got 6 months each. And they'd done it in Japan, as far as I can make out. I don't know whether they did or not. I just don't know. I've only met that bloke once in Yarmouth since I've been home. He lived in Belt. I used to live in Belt. And I never mentioned Tony. I don't know. He seemed bitter because nothing to him. But I did meet him back in the trench because he came back to the trenches after he'd done his 6 months. And I remember in that position, it was in the winter, and Jimmy came back after his 6 months. He had 6 months extra to do in the army. And he was due tomorrow when I was, because he went in the same day, he got on the same train as I did at Southtown Station. And I remember sitting in the trench, and I was counting the hours, alone the days, to my boot back. I sailed out from Busan, and it was winter. I mean, I sailed in March or February back home. And
you left Busan in March?
February. February to get back from my demob in March, end of March. Took 4 weeks home with the oil. The oil that's in that paper there, the SS oil. 4 weeks on the oil, 5 weeks on the Daneira, but we never had no trouble with the pumps, engine surge. That was what was all wrong with the Daneira, so we were told. Anyway, I was in my trench and I was counting the days, and I remember in that last position I was in, we were just hoping and praying and praying and hoping that we weren't going to get no attacks or no nothing or nothing. We never moved much in the very, very severe weather at all. Neither did the Chinese, I believe. Not in the very, very severe. I mean, 41 degrees of frost. I remember going down, I was in B Echelon, and they were cooking a breakfast. And these are not stories. These are the truth. They had bacon. It was like a very, very cheap, very, very, very salty bacon, rind. Like streaky, and I think an egg, and I had to move back. I weren't very far from this little field kitchen, and a flask, a mug of tea. And without exaggeration, before I had walked 50 yards, it was solid. It was frozen solid. And I had to get back where I was, light my Bunsen, my burner, heat the tea, and heat the bacon. It's the only time I got a bacon thing, about twice or three times while I was there. I don't know what it was. And that was the only time I had that. And that was that cold. You couldn't touch the ground with a pickaxe. You couldn't touch. It was just like concrete. Couldn't go to the toilet properly. It was so hard, you couldn't. Anyway, as I said, I got back to the, I was in this last position, and we were hoping and praying, and we got one set to, flares and all that went up, and I thought, well, Christ, I've only got 28 days left to go, I hope nothing happened, you know, and then all of a sudden, Jimmy would come back, and I went over to his trench, and I said to him, oh, Jimmy, and he almost cried, when I said, I'm off tomorrow, Jimmy, and he had his 6 months to do. And I didn't see no more of them. And well, once I bumped into him in Yarmouth, he never spoke much about anything. He just said hello and what have you, you know. But I never seen him. He'd done the 6 months for, you know, was, I would call it desertion. I don't know. And then I said, we got the, during that period, before that period, we had a draw, the shortest straw to go on leave in Tokyo. Rest and recuperation. And as I said, I went.
You drew a short straw.
Well, it was only so many could go from the line each time. And you had a handful of straws, and there was three, probably went out of 10 each time. And on a particular, we were hoping that we went with our best friends, you know, who we knew much of, and we did actually. We, as you see on that photograph, they were most of the fellas that I. Well, we were all friendly. There was no arguments, no falling out. That was a different life. You were, when you're anchor, I mean, you don't associate with anybody else apart from like your sergeant telling you what to do, where to go, and your next fellow mate or the bloke behind you, the section. You don't see nobody else. You don't mingle with. I had a Christmas dinner in Korea, waiting on hand and foot. We took about 3 hours from the line by truck. It was weren't Christmas Day. It was near Christmas time, and then they motored us back by 3 tonners, and we all emerged. They had to do it in batches, obviously. And I remember getting out of the trucks. It was cold. We never even took a gear off, you know, just laid our rifles in a particular place in the tent. And there was all officers above corporal and above sergeant, they were all officers, all waiting on us. I don't think we had any beer, I can't remember. We had beer while we were there, Asahi beer, Japanese Asahi beer, and we had a dinner, a very, very lovely dinner, and we were all waiting on with these captains, majors, colonels, what have you. And it was just in and out, and back on the lorries, back in the trenches.
You were just about to say about going on leave in Tokyo.
That was the rest and recuperation. We flew from Kimpo, and I remember flying, getting on them big transporters. What was it, 20, 30 men each? All along the side of these big transporters, it rattled like hell, and there was always a bin, a big 50-gallon drum bin, in case you wanted to be sick. And they flew us into Tokyo main airfield, and I remember this same boy who upset himself in the trenches with me. We were flying over Tokyo, over the sub part of Tokyo, suburbs, and the plane was so low, and it was raining again, and it was blowing. You could see the water outside. It was trench, and this plane, I wasn't too clever, and I wouldn't have here, as I say, but this boy again started a panic. He looked out the port or the window, and we were right near the wing, back of the wing, and this flames were coming out these engines, you know, flames. He said, "We're on fire, we're on fire, we're going down." And honestly, I thought we really were. And I said, "No, we're not. That's normal, that's natural thing. It's how they are. These engines are like that." I said, "And we're not that low." But we were really low. And it looked as though, well, like all planes, but we went so long for so low, which is unnatural, really, over these air shacks, you know. That's all they were, parts of prior to getting to Tokyo. And we flew very, very, very low for miles and miles and miles. I think it was due to the storm. It was so heavy. And we did come a lot of hurricanes or typhoons or whatever they were. I caught one in the Indian Ocean, one in the Bay of Biscay, but mine, it weren't typhoon, nothing in the bay. Very, very rough weather. But I did catch about three tail enders while I was in there. But anyway, this plane landed and they took us to the Royal Australian Place Data. It was like a hospital. Just like a hospital ward. And it was so nice to go in there and see a bed, white sheets, and we had showers. The food was marvellous. And you could eat any time of the day. Fruit, tinned fruit, cooked meals. Mind you, they were there for the having. But to be quite honest with you, we'd done so much drinking in the RAA, which were the Royal Australian Ginza, I believe it's called, the Ginza Bar. Anybody in Korea who went to Tokyo will know what they are, what they were. Reputable pubs and things, you know, they weren't no dives, they were run by the Royal Australian Army. And we never used to go back for the midday meal. We'd drink all day until we got, well, blotto. You see on our photographs, we were well under the weather with the Yanks with us, and we were there right till midnight, 1, 2, 3 in the morning. The Yanks used to burst in with the truncheons and the white hats and the navy, and they used to, blokes used to tart out the windows, and it was that bloke we got mixed in with. I see him, he was a mate of mine in Colchester, and I went up to him and I said, "What the hell are you doing?" And I said, "You silly bugger." I said, "You've got to come back." I said, "How you got
gone absent without leave?"
I said, "You got any money?" "Yeah," he said, "I'm all right." I said, "Are you sure you got enough money?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "I said, you'd get caught, you know." I said, "You've got to come back sometime or another." Oh, and this Canadian, the one with the other type of belt, he was in that group. He got in group with us, and we were all drinking pals. And we used to go outside, and we moved a couple of times, and we'd get in a rickshaw, and all the balloons flying up in the air at midnight, 1 o'clock, and go through Tokyo in the rickshaws to other places. And anyway, I came back off the R&R and went back into the line. When I got back to the line, they'd moved and they'd been under attack, I believe, or they'd done an attack. And that's when that bloke, I believe, who I said he got shot in the backside, who I had to take over the 88 set for, I believe that's what happened. You can't remember everything and link it all up, you know. It's so vast and so long, and you can't link it all up. It all wedges in somewhere. But they looked after us really, really well. And when we came back, we flew from Tokyo about, I was the early morning, or morning sometime. And I remember getting back into Kimpo, or went pushing to Kimpo, once when that was under, or just about a mile or less under attack.